reason. Brad Stevens and the Celtics, whether you want to say it's coaching and bad execution, or whether you want, whoever you want to blame, and I think it's the answer is both. They kept on isolating against OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, who are the two best isolation defenders on the Raptors team and two of the best isolation defenders in the entire NBA. And you can't do that. Jason Tatum and Kemba Walker are wonderful players, but they are not good enough to create regularly in an isolation against those two guys. And the problem for Boston...
Can I just note that I think Tatum kind of demolished Siakam one-on-one.
Here's the thing. There were a couple of possessions where he did, and especially when Siakam was really tired, but over the course of the series, like especially in Game 6, he didn't. And there were moments in Game 7 where he absolutely did. But like possession by possession, I didn't, you know, and there were times that then they used that to find passes and stuff. But yeah. Like when anybody went against OG Anunoby, which nobody should do, I firmly believe that somebody asked us this discussion, I think it was for a mailbag at some point, about like who's the best isolation defender. And what we thought the fair rubric was a player in the NBA was picked at random. You didn't know who it was. And who would you be most comfortable putting in that situation? We both picked OG Anunoby in that because he can do well on small guys, big guys, everybody in between. And so don't isolate against him. Like, do anything you can to isolate against somebody else.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I agree on OG. I think
didn't do a good job. And Siakam also was carrying a big offensive workload. Yeah, he wasn't as good. I think that's a fair note to make. But still, like, you could go to Fred VanVleet or you could go to Norm Powell, who was in the game for all of these minutes. Like, right. all of these other elements. And it's not like Toronto was, they were doing some good pre-switching and some other stuff to try to avoid some of that, but they weren't doing it super zealously. They have confidence in their guys. And
right.
Miami,
I think your overall point is right, by the way.
Right. Like 100%. But so here's the interesting thing about Miami. Miami, first of all, I think that their top-end defenders in this specific term are generally a little bit worse, though Iguodala can be good in those spots. He's just not as good on fast guys. And Butler, again, not as good on fast guys. But what Miami has that is different is they have weaker defenders as well. So what that means is, if Miami goes to a switch-heavy scheme, Boston needs to spend some of their resources, and the resource in this case is primarily time, to get Duncan Robinson involved in primary actions, to get Goran Dragic, to get Tyler Hero. And yeah, those guys are going to fight, but they just, like, if I feel a lot better about Jason Tatum and Kemba Walker in an ISO against Duncan Robinson than I do against Jay Crowder or Bam. And if they're going to switch everything, then just do it. There is an advantage to be had there, and I think that's really interesting. But let's pivot it back to Toronto. The problem for Toronto is, if you want to go along the same idea, is that they didn't have a reliable way to generate half court offense really throughout the series. Yeah. Incidentally, the best thing they had, in my opinion, was using screening actions, which they didn't do enough. And so they're getting two different things. So if you ran Marc Gasol screens, which they did, I want to say that was the end of game 3 to help get some advantages. The benefit there is Marc Gasol sets really good screens.
Right. And so you can get ball mover and short rolls. Like, you can do a lot of different stuff.
And then the other thing, the way over the course of the series that they actually got the most reliable half court offense was Serge Ibaka pick and pops. And Ibaka, you know, he's not going to hit as many jump shots as he did in elements of the series. Like, there was that time where he hit four in pretty quick succession. I think that was in, like, game 5. It was game 4, because game 5, I think, was the one where they got trucked. By going to Powell and some of the other stuff, like Powell, there was that weird moment where he had in game 6 where he had the end of regulation ISO, because he might be their best isolation player. But It was interesting to me that they didn't get into some of that kind of stuff. But Toronto they don't have great personnel for that. And that's
the problem, though. Like, I know what the numbers said in terms of the on-off numbers with, like, Marc Gasol in that series. I kind of think Toronto wins that series if they go small earlier. Like, Mark was a disaster defensively in that series, I thought.
I would say that he was, there were ways to attack him overall. I think Ibaka was actually the way to go for more of the series, just because that creates problems for a couple of different elements of Boston's offense and defense. But yeah, you're right that could have worked better. But here's the point. Boston's defense was stout enough, and Toronto's offensive personnel was limited enough that they weren't going to score in the half court anyway. Like right. there wasn't a magic fix that was going to solve that. They just, you know, Pascal Siakam isn't that guy yet. Kyle Lowry, that's not the strength of his game. He can do a lot of things well, but he's not the guy who's going to create the seam that is going to open up somebody else. And Fred VanVleet isn't either. I mean, we saw that after Lowry fouled out, and it was like, okay, Fred VanVleet, you need to create a three. And they got nothing, partially because Boston snuffed out a hammer play.
Right.
But Jaylen Brown was awesome despite being hurt. But, I mean, so Toronto, they're in this interesting place where they're an incredibly talented defensive team. They were fantastic in transition in the regular season. But they have, in this current iteration, they have a ceiling. And that's not Masai Ujiri being a bad decision maker or Nick Nurse being a bad coach. I, in fact, would argue that both of them are the best at what they do in the entire NBA. But when you lose your best player, one of the best players on the planet, if not the best player on the planet, for nothing, and you lose another important starting player, not who was good at that, but who's good at other things, for nothing, it's hard. And so the Raptors will eventually, if their goal is to win a championship, they will have to
go get a star.
They'll have to find that some other place. And they can. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. We don't know that for sure as of now. But I don't think that there's, you know, one of the interesting takeaways and of this round for me is this. I was very kind of definitive that I said that there were, in my opinion, three, you know, top tier title teams. And a part of it was like that there were a couple of teams that some people argued should be top tier that I said were not. And those most notably were, in many cases, the Rockets and the Raptors. And what the reason I didn't have them in that was because the Raptors, I didn't trust their half-court offense. That ended up working out. And then for the Rockets, it was that, you know, kind of the worth could against a good team, did they have enough on both ends to really, like, to make it work? Could they reliably stop a really good team, and then could they reliably score? And, you know, they got drilled by the Lakers for a bunch of different reasons, and we'll talk about that presumably later. That doesn't mean everything else was right. I mean, one of my top three teams is already out because the Bucks lost to Miami, and the Clippers could be out on Tuesday if they lose to the Nuggets. So it's not like I'm perfect or anything like that. It's just that oftentimes there can be glaring flaws that keep a team out of the top tier, and a lot of times those don't matter in the regular season. And incidentally, the Bucks are a great example of this. I've done a lot of recording. I recorded with Matt Moore and Jared Dubin. We've kind of done pods talking about the Bucks foibles, if you want to listen to that on Real GM Radio. But it is interesting to kind of see these like imperfect teams kind of run up against brick walls. And that happens. Like, that's what the playoffs are about. The playoffs are about throwing up walls for teams that cannot exist in the regular season.
Well, the playoffs are about counters and being able to counter different things.